We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Federal Judge Joan Humphrey Lefko, speaking to us by phone. Welcome, Joan. Can you hear me all right?
I can. Hello. Good afternoon.
Thank you for being on the program. We're talking today about a book that is a collection of poetry written by your mother, Donna Humphrey, called I Speak of Simple Things. Your mother and you grew up in Kansas. When you were growing up, did you discover that your mother was writing poetry?
I don't think discover is quite the right word. It was, I became aware, I suppose, as a young, like a teenager, maybe even a little earlier, but she had written a few things that were published. And so, of course, that brought her a great deal of excitement and fun. And so I think we knew, my sibs and I knew that she was writing. And what really we didn't understand was how much of it there was.
Mm. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have three.
Three. And where are you in that lineup?
I'm third. Third of four.
Okay. Let's give listeners a taste right off of one of your mother's poems from this book, I Speak of Simple Things. What would you like to read?
We could start with If I Were a Poet.
That's very appropriate.
Okay. If I were a poet, I could speak my thoughts in language all sublime and terrible. Perhaps my words would span my generation, children yet unborn, might strive to plumb their meaning. But I only know of simple things, heart-stabbing winter sunsets, the unexpected thrust of pain that tells me life is fragile, that moments such as this, in which the western sky pours glory on a snowy cornfield, are significant. I speak of ordinary things, of windswept fields, of bright May mornings when my wash is hung to dry in breezes sweetened by the apple blossoms on the tree my father planted. My thoughts are not profound. I only speak of simple things.
Now, when you and your sister Judith Humphrey Smith decided to pull together this collection of your mother's poems after her death, did you have much trouble deciding on a way to organize it and what to title it, since from this poem, clearly that's where the title came from, I Speak of Simple Things. Was it a difficult process?
It was more difficult than you would imagine, unless you've tried to publish a book.
Never have.
We actually did quite well together, and that isn't always the case in a project like this, especially when you have two people who have fairly strong feelings. But we were going to actually name it If I Were a Poet, and learned that there's already a book out there in this Christian genre called If I Were a Poet. So then it was weighing different things, and I'm not sure how we decided on I Only Speak of Simple Things, except that other people who were involved in this, a couple of people had mentioned that as a good one, and we realized that that was really probably the best in light of the what she wrote about.
You said you were surprised to discover how much she wrote. How did you discover that?
After her death, my we found the things in her house. We found the various copies of her poetry, and it was not, you know, lovingly put together in a binder. She had it kind of here and there in her little office or den, and in boxes and in file drawers and so on. So when we cleared out her home, we gathered it all together, and my daughter Helena actually did the big job of arranging them, and then she typed the copy for us. And
so these were handwritten mainly?
She typed them.
She typed them.
And the old typewriters with the keys, no electricity, the starting back with those. Until the end, she had her own little computer.
Now, your mother died at age 89, but she'd been living alone for a number of years as a widow.
Right. Yes, my father died in 78, I guess it was, or 77. And I don't think she ever was really that interested in finding another mate. I think she felt like she wasn't that successful with men, and so she went on her way.
Now, when she was writing and you were a teenager and aware that she was writing, would she find pleasure in it, or was it something she did to deal with private emotions?
I suppose there was a little of both, but I think of it more, especially looking at the collection, I think it was more to deal with her private emotions, at least during the year, the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s. She did write a few things for her grandchildren that are really quite fun, and I'm sure she did it for enjoyment.
Now, your mother dropped out of school, I think after 8th grade, am I remembering correctly?
Yes.
And in the art world, there are descriptions, varying descriptions for people who produce art but who are sort of not professionals. Sometimes it's called naive art or outsider art. What category would you put your mother's writing in? Because she never studied poetry, like, formally, I take it.
Right. Well, when you say she dropped out of school is not quite the right word.
Ah, okay.
She wasn't allowed to go to school.
That long, I see.
Her fondest wish was to go to high school.
Oh.
But her, father wouldn't let her go. So she read. I don't know how to categorize it. I suppose it would be something like naive in the sense that she never I think she did take a couple of courses in, writing, and after my parents moved to Denver.
Oh, she did.
I think so. I wasn't living with her at that time. So.
But she read a great deal.
She read a lot, yes.
So in that sense, like many others, such as Abraham Lincoln, she was self-educated.
Right.
Yeah. Let me remind listeners, this is a live call-in show, and if people have questions or comments, you're welcome to give us a call here at WILL. This is a regional NPR-affiliated station, heard at AM 580 and FM HD 2 and HD 3. If you'd like to be live on the air with our guest, do give us a call. The numbers are in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Or if it's a long-distance call, even if you're listening on the Internet far, far away, you can punch in 1-800-222-9455. So long-distance, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Joan, let's listen to another poem. What else would you like to read from your mother's collection, I Speak of Simple Things, which, by the way, is available, of course, at Amazon.com, Target.com, several other places. What other poem?
All right. Well, here's one that I read in preparing for this today, I read through some of the poems again, and I thought this one was really very powerful. And it was about her when she was a child and her mother being very ill. Grandma spoke into the phone. They say she can't live through the night. She was my mother, and I heard the words. The words I still remember, and my grandma's tall, spare frame, the window, and the pattern of the sun on grandma's floor. That is all. I was 8. My mother was the only light I knew, and yet I don't remember fear or pain or grief, nothing but my grandma's form, the sun that made a pattern on the floor, and my own small self standing in the doorway.
A poem from I Speak of Simple Things by Donna G. Humphrey, read by her daughter Joan, Joan Humphrey Lefko. Joan, you do a lot of writing yourself as a federal judge, pages and pages, but do you ever try poetry?
I don't. I say to people that I gave up any creative writing I had when I went to law school, where I learned to think and write very logically. It's such a different genre. I consider myself pretty good at it, but I don't think I have the imagination that it takes to write poetry.
When your mother was writing these poems as you were growing up with your siblings, did she read them to you after she'd written them, or did she send them off to be published, or were you part of the process in any way?
I remember after I was an adult going back to visit her, and she would have written something and would read it to me. But she was very afraid that it wasn't good. So she would share her poetry only with those she trusted the most, and was always apologizing for it, of course. But most of the things, I think, she had the affirmation of having, if they were published, she had that affirmation, and then she would read them to us, because she would be more proud of it that way.
Now, what types of places published your mother's poetry?
Poetry Forum, which I don't know if that still exists, but those were the first ones, or that was the first publisher that I knew, or that we found. And then a few things were published in farm magazines. And then at the end of her life, she had a relationship that came through a friend with a Roman Catholic magazine in New Zealand called New Zealandia, and the editor of that magazine really liked my mother's work and published a number of her poems, which of course was very exciting for my mother.
Now, you said that you and your sister Judith pulled this together, this collection together for publication. You looked up a title and you found out it was already being used by another, as you said, in the Christian genre. Do you think of this collection as being specifically Christian?
Many of the poems make reference to her faith and her struggle with her faith. The section at the end is called Faith and Prayer. So I would say that, yes, it is quite out of the mind and heart of someone who was brought up in a rather conservative, evangelical environment, although there are a number of poems that show her struggle with trying to fit herself into a particular mold of Christianity.
I want to have you read some from that section later in the program, but I wonder if before we do that, to show how broadly I think people can appreciate the poems in here. Would you mind reading one that's titled An Old Woman?
Okay.
Because we don't in much of the in many of the poems that are published these days, although they're getting a little bit more sensitive, we don't have much that deal with that stage in life. And yet, demographics show, at least in this country, more and more people are in that age group. And I thought that was a particularly apt poem.
You are looking at page 35.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Old woman. I am a house abandoned, haunted by inhabitants of my past long gone. Weathered by time, I stand alone, unused, unloved, unneeded, wearing with what dignity remains some remnants of a time when, if not grace, at least utility was mine. I wait the wrecker's ball, when with a sigh I fall and leave a space for building.
Again, a poem from the new book out, I Speak of Simple Things, a collection of poetry by Donna G. Humphrey, H-U-M-P-H-R-E-Y, a collection edited by her daughter Joan, Joan Humphrey Lefko, that we're speaking with today by phone, and her sister Judith Humphrey Smith.
Back to your question about whether it was how her religious faith affected the poem.
Yes.
I would say the majority of these are not. I mean, they're more about her life and
sure.
Living on the farm in middle America in the 50s and 40s, living in Denver and later in life. So they're more about daily life on the whole.
This particular poem talks about loneliness, being unneeded, a feeling that many people express. Many people have those feelings. Maybe not all of them can express them so well. But you've talked in public about your mother's having bouts of depression for much of her life. And some of these poems talk about that. Did she feel that her religion should save her from that or keep her from that? Or was there a place in her life for therapy, for medication?
She struggled mightily with depression. And, of course, it wasn't until, the 70s maybe, that antidepressant drugs came on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
For many, many years, there was really nothing that was available to help her. So I think she did look to religion as a way to try to understand herself and try to find some refuge from this cross she was bearing in her own life.
Now, she was a Baptist, and you've described her style of religion as evangelical or fundamentalist even.
Mm-hmm.
You yourself have after having grown up in that, have become Episcopalian, at least for I don't know how many years. But how do you, as you look back on your mother's faith, were you able to talk with her about where you were, and did she understand those changes, or was that a difficult thing for the two of you?
I think it was very difficult. It was very difficult. I think, though, it wasn't such an issue until I think the kind of conservative evangelicals became very political, and so it all kind of got tied up with conservative versus liberal and that whole thing. So I found that it was much better if we didn't talk about religion and politics because it wouldn't go anywhere. It was too emotionally fraught for us. On some level, I think she accepted that. In fact, I'm really the only one of her children that has an ongoing connection with the church at all. So I think she appreciated that.
There are, of course, many conservative Christians today, even evangelical Christians, who would describe their politics as socially liberal. But that wasn't probably in your mother's generation even something imaginable, was it?
Right. I would say not.
And yet you were appointed to the federal bench by President Clinton, and you'd been I guess judges don't espouse politics, but they get appointed by politicians at some stages.
Right, right. Well, she came to my induction ceremony. She was very proud of me, but my husband was always a little annoyed that she wouldn't vote for Clinton. He made me to the court. But that's the way it goes.
Politics and religion, yes, that's often a problem for families. When would you read us one of your mother's poems from the last section on faith and prayer? This program deals with ethics and values, and I've been privileged to interview several noted poets over the years on this program, including Ted Kooser when he was U.S. Poet Laureate, and Larry Lieberman, a local internationally known poet, and Janie Murray Walker. But your mother's poetry, I think, holds up very well. And let's hear what you think would be good to read from the section Faith and Prayer in her book, I Speak of Simple Things.
Right. This is called petition. My thoughts turn ragged when I try to pray, falling in pieces, flying about, settling here and there, but never where I need to bring them, to your throne. And so with pen in hand, I catch them, pin them down, and hold them fast to paper. Hear, my Lord, these words I write as thoughts flow through my pen. I sense my lostness. The words, controlled and circumspect, bear small relations to the turmoil in my heart. Could I but see you at my door, waiting for admittance? Are you truly there? There are so many barriers to my soul that only grace can shatter. Where's the key? This door is firmly fast. The locks are old and rusted. Lord, please break and enter, or I die.
Petitions, read by Joan Humphrey Lefkoe from her mother's book, I Speak of Simple Things. Let me repeat the phone numbers for listeners who'd like to make a comment about the poetry you're hearing today, or perhaps ask Federal Judge Lefkoe a question. 217-333-9455 puts you in the WILL studio here from local lines. If it's a long-distance call, you may punch in 1-800-222-9455. And I might just mention that if you've missed part of this program, perhaps you turned in late, these programs are archived at will.illinois.edu. Simply go to AM when you have a choice there of AM, FM, or TV, and you can just punch in anything you remember. Lefkoe will get the program, or Humphrey, or Simple Things from the search engine, or you may go to this date on the list of all the programs under Keeping the Faith and find this program. It'll take a week or so to be archived, but it will be there for your convenience. And, of course, other programs that you might have missed on Keeping the Faith are archived at that location as well. Again, that's will.illinois.edu, W-I-L-L. And since we're about halfway through our program, let me remind people this is a program of Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana. We have a couple callers waiting. Let's go to line number one. Yes, you're on the air with our guest, Judge Lefkoe. Go ahead.
Hello. In appreciating poetry, I'm always curious about the background of the author. So I take it she's from the early part of the 20th century. Can you give me approximate decade and whether it was rural or city? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Joan, go ahead.
Well, my mother was born in 1915, and she was born in Kansas, northeast Kansas, and lived there until the mid-60s when my parents moved to Colorado, to Denver. So her and her children were born. My oldest brother was born in 1935, so she was raising the family in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Many of the poems are very much reflective of family life during that era, especially in rural areas.
Thank you very much for the question. Let's go to another caller on line number 2. Yes, you're on the air.
Hello. I'd just like to comment about the last poem that Judge Lithgow read. It's really a good poem. It has so much alliteration in it and the wordplay on pen and pen, you know, pinning the thoughts with a pen and being unable to pin down what exactly is distressing her. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you very much for the comment. Appreciate it. Any response, Joan?
Well, that's very interesting because I hadn't really thought of that myself, and I'll take a look at it again with that perspective. That's the great thing about poetry, I suppose, that people hear. It's a sort of music.
And interestingly, sometimes when a poem is read aloud, you hear different things than when you read the words on the page. So it's, although some people, when I've had poets on the program before who said, well, I really couldn't get the poem, I didn't understand as much as when I later saw it in print. And so it does come to us two different ways. Some scholars think that all poetry was originally oral, and that's probably the case, but it is an advantage, being able to read it.
Yes.
Do any of your siblings write poetry?
Not that I know of. I don't know why. My two brothers are both very good writers, but no one, and my sister as well, is quite good, but no one has picked up this particular mantle.
Now, there are quite a few grandchildren in your extended family, and you have four daughters yourself. Any of those writers?
Yes. I know that my niece Laurel she does write some poetry. And my girls, I don't know that they are writing poetry, but they might be, and I don't know about it.
We're talking with Federal Judge Joan Humphrey Lefkoe about her mother's book of poems called I Speak of Simple Things. Talk a little bit about the production of this book. You'd not done this kind of thing before, I don't think.
No, I haven't. And this, when my mother died, many people that knew her those who knew that she had been had written poetry over the years, and there were a number of people asked my sister or me if they could have copies of some of her work, and so that kind of planted the seed in my head, and I think my sister as well. So a couple of years later, I thought we better get this done or it's not going to happen. So the two of us decided to go forward, and it was quite a emotional experience and quite an adventure, which we enjoyed. We found the publisher by accident. I met a woman at a dinner, was sitting beside her at the table, and she told me that she was a publisher. And I said, oh, that's interesting. I'm thinking about publishing my mother's poetry. Well, she kept after me until we finally did it, and she was great. This is Suzanne Isaacs at Ampersand, which is the publisher of this book. She's the one who helped us with, you know, the layout, and I think it's just a beautiful presentation. And I really give the artwork to her the credit for that and the ideas for the pictures and so on.
Let's hear some more of your mother's words, if you have another selection from any section of the book you'd like.
Well, let's see. Let's do one that's sort of fun. She wrote this charming one to my niece Laurel, who's when she was a little girl. She's now a grown-up woman, but it's called To Lori with Love and Disagreement. Let me tell you, Lori dear, about your friend, the mouse. When I was just about your age, those pests ate up my house. They chewed away the plaster, ate holes beneath the doors. They ate the food off of the shelves and skittered on the floors. They made their nests, those mother mice, in every nook and cranny, in backs of closets, in our shoes. You never saw so many. They crawled in the piano and made their little nest. They fixed it so it wouldn't play, the vicious little pests. And so, my friend, I must insist, no ifs, no ands, no buts. Though you may think that mice are nice, I hate their little guts. So this tells you a little bit about what life was like in the 1920s on the farm.
Mice still get in people's houses, I'm told. Yes, yes. I never liked them much myself either.
Right, true.
And this spring, ants as well as mice. I don't know about where you live in Chicago, but but here in rural Illinois, we have these experiences. Again, a poem. A poem to Laurie with Love and Disagreement from the book I Speak of Simple Things by Donna G. Humphrey, Humphrey, read by her daughter, Judge Joan Humphrey Lefkoe. Joan, when you were in college and then law school, it took you a while to decide to do that. By that time, you were married to Michael, who's a lawyer, and you decided to go to law school and then rather quickly became a judge. Tell us a little bit about your history and what your mother thought about all that, because that was quite foreign to her experience.
I went to Wheaton College, as you know, Steve, and from there, I really didn't know what I wanted to do, and at that time, it was sort of an expectation that women would become teachers or social workers or nurses, and I didn't really see myself doing that. So I went into Chicago and worked for a while and then went to law school, but I didn't marry until I was out of law school.
Ah, okay. I'd forgotten the exact sequence.
Right. Yeah. But Michael and I had known each other for quite some time. But in any event, I think my parents were quite astonished that someone as quiet as I would want to go to law school. But my mother was immensely proud of me for that. And then I was practicing law in a variety of venues for 10 years, and then I became a U.S. magistrate in 1982, and that really began my judicial career, although actually it was even before that, because I had worked for a state commission as an administrative judge for a few years. So I think my heart was in the judiciary very early on. I was a law clerk to a federal appellate judge, and that, of course, gave me the exposure to the federal courts that made me want to be there.
Now, there's several things in your past, like being a judge in the bankruptcy courts that are relevant for our time today. And a lot of people are thinking about things like bankruptcy with General Motors. From what words of wisdom can you give to the general population about bankruptcies of huge corporations?
I didn't know I would be asked about that.
Well, maybe you can't talk about it. I don't know what the rules are for federal judges.
I could talk about it if I had something to say.
How scared should we be?
Yeah, how scared should we be? I think that we have to understand that one of the great virtues of capitalism is in America has been and around the world perhaps, but is the ability for failing companies to fail so that something new can grow out of it. So the whole idea of bankruptcy is to free capital so that it isn't bogged down in old debt. You know, although there are people who lose a great deal in bankruptcies as a system, it works very well for the continuing growth of industry and production of goods and services and so on.
When my father was a contractor here in Champaign-Urbana area in central Illinois during the 50s, he got overextended at one point. There were some problems with he and his company were building way too many houses for him to be able to adequately oversee it, and there were some problems apparently with subcontractors, but at any rate, he needed to go through a bankruptcy, and it was very difficult for him because of course, his pride in his profession and his work and feeling that some of his creditors would not get their money back, and I know he tried to repay them later, even after having gone through bankruptcy. I don't know exactly how well he succeeded at that, but I know for smaller companies it can be just devastating, and many people have that experience, but it's hard to imagine what huge corporations like General Motors and so forth, what that will mean for hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. Well, I was involved in one case of the United Airlines bankruptcy, and I had the appeal from the bankruptcy court about whether the retired pilots and a couple of the unions, their pension funds could be shortchanged, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a terrible thing.
And yet you say sometimes some good can come out of it.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, your father, if he had been trying to continue to pay that debt, he wouldn't have had the ability to move on and do something new. I don't know what he did, but
He ended up working for his father, which was a little bit difficult, but he at least was able to be a officer in his father's construction company, my grandfather's.
And we see the same thing in personal bankruptcies where people get so overwhelmed with debt that they can't see a way out. It's extremely traumatic, depressing, and the feelings of failure that people experience when they realize that that may be the only solution. But it's a very merciful, humane system.
Or at least it can be.
Yes.
Some of the time. Your mother wrote about some of those feelings, and I want to get back to some of her words. But one other quick topic. This is just a very simple question, but what do you think about the process of the new Supreme Court nomination? An easy question. I mean, yeah. How will she do?
Oh, I think that it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that she'll be approved. And that is, I think she's worthy of being approved, but it's also because the votes are there. And it seems to be a pretty brilliant political move for the president to name the first Hispanic. And I'm very pleased that he chose a woman this time, so there are now, or will be, two women on the court.
Now, you said you didn't happen to know her personally, but do you, I don't know how federal judges interact. Had you known her by reputation?
I had heard of her. Well, I began to hear of her a year or two ago when we were among ourselves talking about who's going to be the next Supreme Court appointment, when long before there was a vacancy. And her name, because of the pressure to name a Hispanic, her name surfaced. I just heard that she was, you know, very able and thought that she would be good. And, of course, we had our own candidate here in the Northern District of Illinois whose name was out there a lot, Diane Wood. So we're disappointed for her.
Sure. And one last thing. The New Yorker magazine a couple weeks ago had a profile on Chief Justice Roberts, John Roberts, and part of the profile mentioned his concern for the need to raise salaries for federal judges. And I realize for me to ask you a question like that, your response might sound self-serving, but I know you're concerned about the justice system and what it means when there are not competitive salaries, when students out of the best law schools can get their first job being paid more than a federal judge is paid, how it kind of skews the system. Would you mind saying a word or two about that? I know you and John Roberts are on opposite ends of the political spectrum.
Well, not necessarily. I don't want to talk about that on the air, but okay. I think the judges feel that we've been shortchanged by Congress because other federal employees get regular cost of living increases, but the judges don't. The judges only get an increase when Congress decides to give us one, and typically our increase has been much considerably smaller by rate than the general schedule federal employees. That said, at a time when people are losing their jobs,
sure,
law firms are shedding lawyers,
right,
it's really not a time
of
for
course
those of us who have certainly a very nice salary and security for retirement to complain.
Right, right. But the effect on the system is that there are people who might be excellent federal judges who say no thank you.
I think there are.
Yeah.
Indeed, there are many people who, yeah, they have families. They,
of course,
want to be able to, you know, send them to the best schools and all those things.
Right. Well, let's go to a non-judicial issue and back to your mother's book of poetry.
Okay.
I Speak of Simple Things by Donna Glynn Humphrey. And we have her daughter Joan here reading some of the poems from that collection. It is available at... what will you tell us? So where might people find this, copies of this book? Poetry isn't readily available these days.
It's often available on Amazon.com, and I think Barnes & Noble or BN.com. And you mentioned Target.com. I didn't
right
know if it's there.
It is, yeah.
And the publisher is Ampersand Works. That's AmpersandWorks.com. And I invite you to go to the website to see some of the work that Susie Isaacs has done with not only our book, but others as well.
And let's have another poem of your selection from the book.
All right. Well, here's, I think, one of my very favorites. It's called Bill, circa 1920 to 1930. I have small certainties about the ways of God, but some child-minded angel must have touched my father's heart so that he bid upon and bought a leggy, lovely saddle horse named Bill. Embarrassed by his rank extravagance, no plow horse this, he brought him home. My brothers led him out, gravely covering their joy with manly objectivity. Too much exuberance would never do. One by one, they tried him out and found his gait as smooth as silk, and given rein, that horse would all but fly. I was too young, a girl, to ride alone, but came a day when I could lift the saddle, cinch it tight, and climbing up begin my tentative steps to freedom. And came another day and days when girl and horse, beyond the sight of elders, streaked through pastures, jumping ditches, risking life and bones at breakneck speed, and then sedately going home, bringing the cows for milking. This one sweet, happy memory, almost unchanged by time, I carry from my Kansas childhood. This one delight, my friendship with a leggy, lovely saddle horse named Bill.
Written words by Donna Humphrey. Spoken words by her daughter Joan from the collection I Speak of Simple Things. Poetry over a lifetime of the a girl who grew up in Kansas and later wife and mother and writer. What was your mother's personality like? How would her friends describe her?
Well, my mother loved to talk. She could talk to anyone. And it was kind of interesting that she had many friends, and I think most of them were, at least in her later years, were younger than she, like women who were my age or my sister's age would enjoy my mother's company a great deal. She just had a way of bringing people out to talk about themselves, which I think, of course, is the best way to start a conversation, ask people about them and their lives. So she was very involved with family.
And with church.
And with church, yes, she became a Presbyterian in the years in Denver from the 60s forward.
But when you were young, you were going to a Baptist church nearby in Kansas?
Yes, well, the little church that I grew up in, and a picture of it is in the book, was on a hillside in a little crossroads community called Woodlawn in northeast Kansas. And my mother's parents were founding or charter members of that church, and it's actually still holding services today. I think the attendance is probably as much as it was in the 50s when I was a child going there.
We're down to our last 10 minutes of this show, Keeping the Faith, here on WILL AM 580. Listeners can still call. We're happy to take your calls with comments or questions for our guest, Judge Joan Humphrey Lefkoe. You may call, if it's a local call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That'll get to several lines here, and our technical director, Kyle Kroha, will answer the phone and put you in the queue. And if it's a long-distance call, you can call toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. And again, these shows are archived at will.illinois.edu if you'd like to listen to this show again or other shows where we've interviewed folks in the past. Joan, let's talk a little bit about going to church with your mother. How often were you in that Baptist church that's pictured in this book? In a typical week, how often would you go?
In my childhood?
Yes.
Sunday morning for 2 hours, Sunday evening for 1 hour, Wednesday night for prayer meeting, and Saturday night for Youth for Christ.
It sounds very familiar to me growing up here in Urbana, going to an independent church that my grandfather was pastor of. We had a very similar schedule. In fact, I would say identical. So what did you do in church all of those hours as a youngster?
Well, I went to Sunday school, and of course my mother and all of the other moms were Sunday school teachers. We had vacation Bible school. Sunday night would be singing, and there would be a sermon, prayers, just like churches are today, more or less. You have to remember that there wasn't all that much to do in the 1950s in rural, on the farm in Kansas, so going to church was a way to see other people as well as to worship. Youth for Christ was something that a pastor who came there in 1951, I believe, started. And we would go from, it was a group of churches that would put their youth together for Saturday night, Youth for Christ. And that was a kind of a highlight of the week back in the day, because we could meet boys from other towns and that kind of thing.
It was a social occasion.
Yes, yes.
Right. There were several things going on all at once. Right. So why don't you write this up? Life on a farm in Kansas to then becoming a federal judge. Surely you've been approached by publishers.
I haven't been approached by publishers exactly. I've had somebody ask me if they could do a movie on my life, and I had one person ask me if she could do my biography, which I thought that was kind of horrifying to me, that I would be that kind of a person that anyone would read a book. Horrifying isn't the word, I guess. Flattering, surprising.
But being a shy person, you were horrified.
Shy person, I'm horrified. Thinking about having, you know, your private life exposed like that.
Sure.
I must admit I took a look at Elizabeth Edwards' memoirs on the bookstore the other day, and I thought, well, I wonder if I could write my memoirs, so maybe someday I will. And the other thing is that my mother has a lot of material about her life that's not her poetry, but she wrote, you know, family history and that sort of thing, so I thought possibly I could work with that and sort of continue the story into my life, and maybe someday my children would follow up with it, because I think that would be a great gift to them.
When you read your mother's poetry, does it take you back to Kansas?
Yes, yes. I think one of her great talents was to be able to describe nature. There's one line where she says, this is called Thanksgiving, I thank you for the wheat fields waving gently in the wind, ripe for the reaping, golden in the fields and golden in the bread upon my table. I just really can relate to that from those days. And she talks about, there's one poem called Summer Storm that is about a big hailstorm that ruined the crops. How my father went out to survey the damage. It was very touching.
I think we have time for that one, if you're willing.
Okay. Summer Storm. They looked out on the field of corn where just this morning hope stood, dark green and shoulder high. They saw it through a blue of steam and mist as wind and rain and hail combined to wreak a senseless fury on the green and innocent promise of the fields. Silently they watched, the roar of storm so loud to drown the sound of speaking. Silently they waited for the storm to pass. Gradually the roar became a murmur, then a drip of an occasional raindrop off on the roof. And then, as though nothing at all had happened, the sun broke through and cast a shining rainbow on the dark and hurrying cloud. The man pulled on his boots. She made no move to go. This was his time to be alone. She watched him as he slowly slogged his way through all that muddy waste where just this morning hope stood, shoulder high, returning to the house which held his riches after all. He grinned a little wryly as he said, "The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away." She smiled and touched his hand, and blessed is his name, she answered.
Summer Storm from I Speak of Simple Things, a book of poetry, words written by Donna Glynn Humphrey that we've heard read selections from today on Keeping the Faith by her daughter, Federal Judge Joan Humphrey Lefkoe. John, we're down to our last 2 minutes, and I know particularly with telephones, it's hard to know how to finish. So let me ask you just a couple things. When this book first came out, how have people responded to it? Because your mother was a total unknown.
Yes. Well, it was very well received. We had the good fortune of being invited to be on the Today Show, so that gave it some publicity. Before that, Mary Schmeek, who's a wonderful columnist in the Chicago Tribune, had written a story on it, and that was something I didn't mention when you talked about how we got this off the ground, but I asked Mary to look at it and tell me if she thought that it had a wider audience than friends and family.
She's a wonderful writer.
Yes, she is. And so she said later, she said, "I was scared because she thought she'd get a bunch of doggerel kind of thing." And so she called me the next day after looking at it and said, "Could I write about this in my column?" So that, of course, was a great thing. And that was before the book had even been published. So once she had written about it, then I knew that we had to get it published, and we went forward very fast from then.
What was the experience like being on the Today Show?
It was exciting, I must admit, to see how TV is put together. You're looking at this little square in front of your eyes, but there's so much motion around you when you're in the studio. It was quite an amazing experience. So well, it was fun.
Well, I know today has not been the easiest time for you to read poetry on the air because of it turned out this was your moving day, and so I really appreciate you making the effort to keep with the schedule anyway, and you didn't even sound out of breath, so...
Well, thank you. It was a nice respite, and it was wonderful to talk with you and be on your program.
Well, we are out of time, and I do want to thank our guest, Federal Judge Joan Humphrey Lefkoe, for reading from her mother's poetry. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, this is Julie Pride, administrator of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. We have plenty of H1N1 vaccine available for everyone in our community. We continue to vaccinate Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. at our public health offices at 201 West Kenyon in Champaign. The vaccines are free and available for everyone. We have plenty of both missed and injectable vaccine. Nearly 50,000 people have been vaccinated in our county so far. Please consider becoming one of them. Flu is preventable. Vaccination is the best way to protect yourself and those around you.
For more information, visit willconnect.org/health or contact the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District at 217-352-7961.
It's been called all kinds of things, God, Brahman, Nirvana, but renowned religion writer Karen Armstrong says we've often lost sight of what this ultimate reality means. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, Armstrong explains why modern ideas about God are so different from what our ancestors thought. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening at 7. We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of University of Illinois alumni Alice and Robert Campbell.
Today's broadcast is funded in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, a state agency.
This is WILL AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.